And we're going to start with an informational hearing. Very exciting new program that I've been privileged to have some acquaintance with from at least 2 years ago when it was an idea in its formative stages, and been privileged to see some of the product earlier, and I'm real grateful to have with us today two of the members who've worked to make this a real happening. I think the two gentlemen that are with us, names are on the screen for you. Amy Clarinos and Dean Arithsmith. And so with that introduction, we're going to get started. I know that people are watching because we have the TV on us, aside from the presentation we're making. So I know I invite other people to be aware of what we're doing here today, and I think you'll enjoy it. That?
Great.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Charles. First of all, I'd like to introduce a company to you. It's a study dog. It's a new company. It's been around for about a little over a year, but the first product will actually not come out until this week or next week, Monday, as the first official program. It's a program that's delivered completely over the internet, and it's designed to help children who are struggling readers. And I'll explain what we mean by struggling readers in a second. We think it's unique in the world, actually, and it's all done through the technology, and it's built on sound curriculum and educational practices. The company, as I mentioned, is still a young company. It will ship its first product on Monday, but it has been in Oregon and Washington schools being tested since November.
We need, for our record, you to introduce yourself over the microphone so that it's
okay.
Recorded.
My name is Dean Clanis, and I am the President and Chief Executive Officer of Study Dog. And assisting me today is Dr. Dean Arithsmith, who's our Chief Learning Officer at Study Dog. To start off with, I wanted to show who the target children are that we've designed this product for. If we look at all the children here, approximately 30 million of them in the United States, in grades K through 6, 50% are reading above the norm, and they are not our target. Although they will end up using our product, they are not the children that we have designed this product for. On the other side of the coin, there are 10% of the children that are learning disabled, maybe through some severe learning problem. They are also not what this product is designed for. We have designed it for the 40%, which we call readers below the norm, but they are internet trainable, and they're carrying about 12 million of those children, and they're characterized as people who are missing skills, mostly phonological processing skills, which I will talk about in the next slide, but they need more practice, and they need some motivation and discipline, and they would be good readers. The situation, this is kind of a background. I don't think there probably is a person in this state that doesn't know this, but let me go through it to make sure. First of all, learning to read is difficult for children. There's good news and there's some bad news. The good news is that we have identified the main problem here is some children have poor phonological processing skills. And what that is when you hear a sound or a word, that's called a phoneme. When you see that sound or word put on a piece of paper, that's called a grapheme. Being able to translate effortlessly from a phoneme to a grapheme and vice versa, grapheme back to a phoneme, is phonological processing. Some children don't have that skill, and it's not as developed as in other children. But the good news is we've identified that. The other good news is that this skill can be learned and developed. It's like a muscle. It's not something that's an impairment that if you don't have, you just have to cope with. You actually can strengthen this. However, there's some bad news for, unfortunately, for these children. Casual instruction will not help these children very much, such as reading a bedtime story or a parent reading with them, with the child. The National Reading Panel has been quite clear in saying that it must be explicit and systematic type curriculum. Also, one-on-one instruction is required, which is difficult to have because this child may be in second grade, but he may be reading at a kindergarten level. So not only are there several children in the class, but they're also at different levels. Teacher finds it almost impossible to deal with this child one-on-one. Some other bad news is, unfortunately, since reading is the gateway to the rest of learning, poor reading can start a bad precedent and be a poor learner through school. And unfortunately, it even gets worse that you can see they're kind of in a bad position because they can't get too much help at home because of the casual reading part, and they can't get too much in school if they've missed the first skills in the beginning because of the one-on-one problem. And so some of these children are almost just kind of hanging in there and not getting any better. And if, unfortunately, if this isn't identified and corrected by grade four, some psychologists say it's just almost impossible to catch up. The result is we have too many poor readers, not only in our state, but in the country, and it's not getting much better, as I'll show you right here. This is a phenomenal chart. I don't know if you can see that very well. Let me tell you what that says. This comes from the Department of Education, and those blue bars show the amount of federal spending on education. You can see we're spending a fair amount and more as we're going. The red line, unfortunately, shows the reading proficiency of our children. These are K through 12 children. And 32% of fourth graders can read proficiently, meaning the rest cannot. So the part of this is, although we're spending money here, it's not getting much better because we're not really addressing the problem. Study Dog then looked at all this, and we had two problems to wish to solve. And this is these are the two problems that this product does solve. The first part is we specifically have met the needs of struggling readers, not just of children learning to read, but of struggling readers. It's a little bit different. They need explicit and systematic instruction, as by the National Reading Panel. And we're very fortunate in our state here in Oregon to have University of Oregon present, who has one of the best early childhood reading development programs. We have modeled that our program after theirs. In fact, one of their leaders is on our advisory board. The other part is we need one-on-one instruction, and so we have designed a combination of not only curriculum but also technology and creative design to really lock that child on. And they sit in front of our system, they have earphones, and they are totally engaged with definitely one-on-one training. This is...
Yes.
Before you move on, going back to the University of Oregon, I believe we heard of their program last session on the House side. Who is the person on your...
Roland Good.
Okay.
Roland is a member of the Big Ideas in Beginning Reading, and he's a director of DIBLES, which is a reading assessment program at the University of Oregon.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so those are the two problems that we want. That's the first problem we want to solve. The second problem we want to solve is important one. There's not a teacher who won't tell us that this is an important thing, but sometimes it misses some of the professors. And that's getting through, breaking down the barrier that a child can develop. When a child starts to not perform well in reading, they can compensate for that with behaviors. And depending on, there can be a wide range of behaviors. They can be acting out, they can be a problem, or they can be just as dangerous to reading, which has become very quiet and become sullen and withdrawn. Both of which are severe barriers. And if we don't, and they both block good instruction and learning. And if we cannot pierce those barriers, then even with explicit and systematic instruction, we really won't get through to them. So those that we saw are the two biggest problems that we wanted to solve, and those are the ones that we did solve. Now I'd like to explain how this works, and then I'll actually show you a couple demonstrations. This is a technology company solving an educational problem, if you will. We have a very strong curriculum and educational premises, but the contribution that I think this product makes is one of a technology basis. And after three or four slides, I hope you will see that. It all starts off with assessing a child first in reading. This is all done over the internet. And we will know then after that assessment where that child is and what enrolled grade they are, and we can tell what their reading assessment level is. And all these assessments are based on state and federal standards. Then once a assessment is known, a skills gap is created. So then we put together a curriculum, research-based curriculum program to that's special to that child to get that child reading back up to their class norm. That is delivered to them over the internet in 15-minute modules, all of which have instruction, which I will show you some in about 10 minutes or 5 minutes. Built into that, though, as you can see in the kind of the orange or the gold area, is assessment. The child is assessed every 15 minutes to see how they're doing, see if they're actually engaged and increasing their performance or not. And then we take action, as I'll show you. And then this process, it will take approximately, if a person is one grade level behind, let's say, in approximately an elapsed time of 1.5 to 2.5 months, they will, our research has shown that they will increase by one full grade level. There are three things that are different about this product that we believe to be very significant. The first one is that we call the child stickiness, and that's ensuring that the child stays with the program and not really requiring a lot of parental supervision. And that's very key because we have to have that child not only engaged for 15 minutes a day, but also come back the next day and the next day and the next day until that's done. We do that four ways. The first one is we make it a very, very creative game format, and you will see a little bit of this in a moment, where Dr. Z is a famous anthropologist who has summoned you, the child, and Study Dog, your friend, to the Lost Island to help her save it from falling into evil hands. And all this then goes through this game where you have to solve puzzles and you get to certain levels and you move up to another level and so on and so forth. So it's intriguing and children do like that. The other thing, as you'll see for yourself, is very, very high quality graphic design. It's like a video game. The third one is, as they perform and they get things correct, they can earn points. And these points then can turn into a Study Dog online store where they can get, they can purchase products, all for points, of course, not money. And these prizes, although insignificant in monetary value, are fun for the kids, and they get mailed to their home, which is always at this, at ages 5 to 9, it's kind of exciting to get something in the mail. The points actually turns out to be quite good because on top of that we can introduce a concept called bonus points, which we get them to do what we want them to do, and we actually can not only manage the child's performance that way, behavior, but we found out we can manage the parent's behavior as well by reading to the child, having the child read to them, etc. And then finally, because it's all electronic and all over the internet, we engage the child's community, the educational community, in an effort to help that child learn. So we send back a weekly progress reports to the parent showing exactly where the child is and exact activities, if they would like to help, how they would like to help. They're part of a bigger system. Study Dog will tell them how it works, but they're engaged in that, so they know exactly how the child is doing. Also, we have a teacher link that is, if the parent okays it, the same or a similar report goes to the teacher of that child. And that's important because that anytime we can increase the one-on-one instruction from a teacher, that helps the child out immensely. And many times teachers know children are not progressing well in reading, but they don't know precisely where they're having trouble. This is a diagnostic tool to tell them exactly. That's number one. Number two is the child's learning profile. Now we'll start to see some of the technology I spoke about come up. We have a technology engine that learns how a child learns and then gives the material, the curriculum to that child in a way that best suits that particular child. And we start off with is what is a learning profile of a child, and our goal is to have that child learn better, faster, and easier. And it starts off with an interview, online interview of the parent and of the teacher about that child. That's our starting state. There's no technology involved in that. That's just collecting information. And it fits into these colored areas. The first one, the green area, is a reading skills inventory, which we know because because the child has completed the inventory compared to whatever the state standard is. The personal one, the bio data, is age, gender, sibling order. And then the last two, the blue and the red, have to do with learning styles and what environments they learn the best in. And we're always trying to answer those kinds of questions, and this will help us create a profile for a particular child. Once we learn, we have a starting state from what the teacher tells us and what the parent tells us. And after that, we have a technology. The third area is called the Smart Study Dog Agent. It's a software term for a piece of software and technology that actually matches that learning profile with the optimal learning resource. So the curriculum, like multiple sound consonants, might be the same, but the way we deliver it might be different depending on who the child is. It navigates the child to the lesson. The ones that are having no problem in a particular lesson, they move quickly. The ones that are having difficulty, they are routed back and go more slowly and get more review points. If a child's performance starts to go down a little bit, that's indicating to us that we don't have quite the handle on the style. So it will, based on rules that we give it, will try different styles. And when it learns what best suits that child to help them learn easier and faster, then it will give more of that type of style to the child and update the learning profile. Okay? These are some of the results that we've had. That's about 30 days in three schools, two in Washington and one in Oregon, elementary schools, where we have gone to the schools. They've cooperated with us, and we've asked to give us their struggling readers. And down at the bottom on the x-axis are several categories. I know it's almost impossible to read. It goes from alphabet to single sound consonants, multiple sound consonants, onset sounds, a number of categories that complement or that make up what it takes to read at the first level. And the y-axis is percentage of students reaching mastery. So then the two bars, the whitish bar with the hash marks, is what the skills test was. And then the purple was what after 30 days it was. You can see it's pretty dramatic improvement. And that's been consistent in all of our tests so far. Why is the internet so important to us? And it's very important, and for two reasons. Number one is the child's learning program can be adjusted on the fly. We take our best shot at, based on where the child was, technologically speaking. We know where the child is, and we try to give them the right learning program for that child. But as we learn through this process, we might want to change some of the curriculum. Maybe give them more of something or less of something, or maybe a whole other category that we did not expect to do in the beginning. And the reason we can know this is we're assessing that child over a period of approximately 2 months every 15 minutes. So constant assessment. So we know exactly where it's working, where it's not working, and we can adjust to it. Almost impossible to do it all perfectly from the beginning. And then finally, as I alluded to in the last slide, is adjust to whatever the child's style is through the Smart Study Dog Agent. The other reason it's so important, it engages people who are important to that child to help them, engage them without putting too much responsibility on their shoulders, but still help them teach that child to read, and that's the parent with a parent report. It reinforces the classroom and study dog curriculum, as well as when a child wants to read a book to them, which is part of the curriculum, then what will happen will be they once that's happened, they get on the internet and they say that's done, and that child is awarded some bonus points. And then the same thing as I talked about earlier with the teacher report to promote the one-on-one training. Okay. What I'd like to do now is just show you. The product. Okay. Excuse me, just a second, please. Now, what I'm going to show you are two or three clips of what a product can look like. This is about maybe 6% of the product, a very small percentage, but since we don't have 2 months here, I don't think we want to see the whole thing, but it should give you an idea of how it works. Also, the child will be in front of the computer with earphones on, and so they'll be able to hear it very well. Since we don't have a speaker system, or at least I haven't figured out how to do it, I've turned my laptop volume up as high as it goes, so hopefully you'll get to hear it. So here's the first part where you and the child and the study dog are going through solving certain things, and the very first thing to help Dr. Z is he comes to a castle gate, and he's approached, stopped by the guard. The guard's name is Flop, and Flop is going to put him through some exercises. We'll see what that looks like.
Hello? Hello? Anybody there? Stop here. Who goes there? Dr. Z's helpers. We've come to find ingredients for the Lost Island potion. Can you let us in the castle, please?
Dr. Z? Oh, yes, of course. Wait a minute. How do I know you are who you say you are? I'll have to ask you a few questions first.
Oh, okay.
Guard? Okay, here's what you do. The letter C usually has the K sound as in cut.
These are multiple sound consonants.
Followed by an E, I, or Y, can have the S sound as in city. Listen to the next word carefully and choose the sound on the wall that it matches. Set. Does it have the same first sound as cut? Or does it have the same first sound as city? Click on the word on the wall that has the same sound. City, you're doing great. How about can? City, that's not quite it. How about circle? Good job. How about cup?
Okay, that's... We'd rather take you through all that. There's several of those that we go through. And they're gaining points. And of course, underneath a seemingly fun game is a quite serious engine assessing and keeping track of this. Next thing, we'll go to look at sight words, and we'll go to the ogre and his ogre's library. Sight words, by the way, make up about a third of our written page. So. These are all parts of standard curriculum. This is a timed exercise. That one we missed because it took too long. I think you get the gist of this, and we go through this time and time again, and we build up the words, and so pretty soon they learn words. That means it allows them to go through sentences more fluently. The last one I'll show you is oral comprehension, and we'll go to where a study dog and a child will meet Miss Penny. This will be the last one.
Welcome to Miss Penny's Feed and Read, the best cooking book on Lost Island. Hey, where did you come from? my mother. Now, what do you have? Would you like to try and win some lemonade? Sure. What do we have to do? Read this book and then answer a few trivia questions. It's easy peasy. This is the back of the book. This is the spine of the book. The title and author are written here. This is the front of the book. It says, Ash and the Wizard Lose the Potion by the Ogre. Look at the picture on the cover. What do you think the story is about? How Ash and the Wizard lost the potion. How the wizard made the potion. How Ash gathered things in the forest. How the wizard made it. Very good. This one right will get bonus points. Okay, let's read the story together. When you're ready.
Now this is oral comprehension. Well, they're not expected. This is young enough age, they're not expected to read this yet, but they are expected to listen and comprehend.
She picked berries. She cleaned the workroom. She was a wizard's helper.
And if I press this over here on the button, it will repeat. If I press this to the next page, it will go to the next page. And finally, in a few more of these pages, we'll finish the story.
He was making a new potion. No one knew what it was for. He kept that a secret.
And I think, I know you, I hate to interrupt you in the middle of the story, but I think you probably get the gist.
Oh,
yeah. Good. Okay. Let me turn the lights back up now. Thank you very much. Okay. What I wanted to do now is tell you a little bit about what the costing and the pricing of this product is. The only thing that can help a struggling reader that we are aware of are tutors or learning centers, such as a Sylvan Learning Center. The problem with a Sylvan Learning, or not a Sylvan Learning Center, but any learning center, is it's very effective, but it's very costly. Minimum about $1,500, and typically it's closer to $4,000 or $5,000. And it's inconvenient. They may have to have at least an hour twice a week, or 2 hours a week. So it's pretty tough. Study Dog can do the same, but do it at home and accomplish the same results and possibly even better. And this price is $495. Okay. Now, one of the reasons I came down here was to tell you about this product, and I appreciate that opportunity. The other one is to give a possible proposal how the state of Oregon and Study Dog might cooperate together. And what that would be is it's using Study Dog at home. And the purpose of which would be to increase the amount of training that a child has. Because if they only are in school so many hours, that's they've got lots of things to train on, and if they can get another 15 minutes a day or a couple hours a week on training where they engage the parent and a child at home, that will increase the amount of training, which never hurt, and it's very good. Also involves parents, and that's something that teachers have been trying to do for a long time, is to get parents involved outside of school to help the child read. The last thing is the teacher, through the teacher report, is connected and informed and appraised how this is going. This could happen year-round, but I would say that we would want to launch in the summer in a reading readiness program where it could be like a booster course for children who we know are going to be struggling readers. We start in the late summer, so when it hit the school year, they're back again. It would be for struggling readers identified by schools, and it would be two-level pricing, one for poor children and one for non-poor children. And what we had in mind there, we do not have any specifics in mind, but what we had in mind there was for poor children, the price of the product would be whatever the list price is minus a discount. But for non-poor children, since we live in the state of Oregon as well, we would probably like to donate the majority part of our profits to help the poor children. That completes what I had in mind. I'd be happy to answer or field any questions that you might have.
Appreciate very much. Very, very good presentation. Questions from the committee?
Well, have you talked with the individual school districts, for one thing? This wouldn't this be a local decision-making? Or do you need buy-in from the State Department of Education?
Well, the marketing plan for the company is to sell directly to the parents. I did not make that clear. We do not have plans of selling to schools. That's not a bad idea, but we just don't have, it's not in our market plan right now. So this would be a proposal that maybe we could work through the state somehow. We probably are not prepared to sign up to develop a sales organization to go calling on the school districts.
Now, may I?
Yes.
At the very beginning, you said that you did some test projects in various schools. Is that right?
It tested in schools?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you say that? Two in Washington and one in Oregon.
I'm sorry.
Did you say that you did two in Washington and one in Oregon?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Which ones?
Well, no. I just thought that you had some kind of a tie-in and were working on developing your program with the schools and the parents. I wasn't quite sure what your intent was.
Well, the thing is we needed to test this product long before it's ready to be shipped.
Yeah.
So we want to start very early in a program. So, we started about the first week in November. And we talked to a number of school districts and school elementary schools in Oregon and Washington, and these are the three that were most enthusiastic about the program and identified struggling readers and cooperated with us. So we didn't have resources to go to many more than three.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I do appreciate this. And
okay. Thank you.
You've made a lot of more people aware of what you're attempting, and I'm sure we'll hear from you down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to go from our informational meeting to hearing of a couple of bills. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 184. And we need our sign-up sheet.
Yes, we need some rules.
And we have okay, we have Jeff Sweetsart, and you have some other folks coming up with you.
Yes, Chair.
I only have one signed up, but I guess we'll tolerate. No, we will gladly accept all of your.
Chair Starr, I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 184 and 185. Are we doing 185 or 184?
184.
184. That is the Aspire program?
Right.
I think probably if you would look at your witness list for Senate Bill 185, I think if you could transpose those numbers, I think those are the folks who are testifying on Senate Bill 184.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I want to just briefly introduce myself. I'm Jeff Sweetser, Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and this bill here does two things. One, establishes in statute the existence of the Aspire program, which is a early awareness outreach program in high schools, and the second piece that it does is establishes a fund, a treasury, to accept donations on behalf of this fund. And with that, I would like to turn it over to the rest of the speakers to provide you more information about the Aspire program.
Thank you, Chair Starr, members of the committee. My name is Vicki Merkel. I am the Aspire Program Manager with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Aspire recruits and trains adult volunteer advisors to mentor high school students in achieving their post-secondary education goals. Aspire stands for ASP, Access to Student Assistance Programs, and by that we mean access to all types of educational options, including trade schools. IRE, In Reach of Everyone, Aspire is an all-comers program. It's not just for high-achieving students or at-risk students. By being inclusive, we are more likely to reach students who really feel they cannot continue their education. In the National Report Measuring Up 2002, Oregon received a grade of D+ for participation in post-secondary education enrollment and an F for affordability. Counseling staff are overburdened and do not have time to advise all students regarding their post-high school plans. Not only are their caseloads increasing, they have students with more complex problems. Aspire is administered by OSAC, the state financial aid agency. OSAC helped more than 50,000 Oregon students work toward their educational goals in 2002, nearly one of every four enrolled students in the state. OSAC has partnerships with public and private colleges, high schools, private foundations, businesses, and public agencies. One partner, the Oregon Community Foundation, provided initiative funding in 1998 for a three-year pilot to determine if an access to education program could be designed that would work in both large urban and small rural areas. The pilot was successful and proved that Aspire could provide a flexible framework of program how-to procedures and resources that allow schools to design the program to meet their local needs. The Aspire curriculum includes handbooks for staff, volunteer advisors, students, and families. We also have internet resources at aspireoregon.org, and each fall a conference training for school staff and volunteers hosted by a college. School staff and volunteers review the Aspire curriculum of possible volunteer student activities such as career choice and college selection, and then design their local program focus by selecting activities that complement their school's current post-secondary efforts. Schools apply and compete for Aspire. They receive training, resources, and technical assistance, but no funding. Currently, 39 schools have Aspire programs, and at least 18 more high schools will be added next year. The school designates a staff person as the Aspire site supervisor. In addition, a federal AmeriCorps grant application has been submitted that will provide members to 36 schools who require extra help to coordinate volunteers. Volunteers are matched with 1 to 15 students each for the school year, so students know that they have one designated person to help them. Currently, there are 419 volunteers mentoring 1,554 students in Oregon. Another 6,300 students have participated in other types of Aspire activities this year. Over 50% of all volunteers return the next year. Aspire is designed with capacity building and sustainability in mind. Schools move through four stages: initiating, developing, expanding, and sustaining. Direct support from Aspire program staff decreases as the program moves towards sustainability. Schools that reach sustainability can then be replaced with initiating schools. Two regional supervisors and myself provide the training and technical assistance to the schools. The Oregon Community Foundation and the Ford Family Foundation have indicated continued funding support. The Oregon University System Gear Up Grant has included Aspire as a service choice for school cluster participants. And as I mentioned, Aspire is applying for a National AmeriCorps grant, which will fund 36 members and one staff person. Schools requesting a member will contribute a small cash match. Other funds will continue to be sought for continuing curriculum development. In summary, the Aspire program goals are to provide mentoring and resources to help high school students access education and training beyond high school, help high schools build a sustainable community of volunteer mentors, educate students and families about the scholarship application process and other options for paying for post-secondary education. Kathy McEwen will now speak to you about her experience at Marshfield High School in Coos Bay.
Senator Starr, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity today. My name is Kathy McEwen, and I'm here to talk to you about the Aspire program from the perspective of a parent, an Aspire advisor, volunteer, and as board chair of the Coos Bay School District. My experience with mentoring began 5 years ago. I was a mom with two children who had just been through the college and scholarship application process. We struggled through it, and we survived, but we did it without Aspire, and it was much more difficult. At our high school, the counselor-student ratio is 376-1 at this point in time. We have wonderful, talented, dedicated counselors at our high school who have very little time to devote to the details and the consistent contact necessary to steer 260 seniors through the maze of the post-secondary planning process. Armed with my recent experience and flanked by two other mothers who had had similar concerns and experiences, we approached our principal at that time at our high school and offered our time and assistance to help students and their parents who were trying to navigate this process on their own. We found that in a very short time we were very busy, and the response was good. Then this wonderful program called Aspire appeared on the horizon, and Marshfield applied for and received an Aspire grant. Aspire offered training and support to help us so that we could do exactly what our school and what we had called our college and scholarship task force had intended to do from the beginning. That was extend and enhance the reach of our counselors in post-secondary planning. Aspire provided training in the college vocational technical admissions process, the scholarship search and application process, and the basics of financial aid. We were given a well-thought-out curriculum with a month-by-month calendar for each grade level so that we were able to schedule our students' activities throughout the year to help meet their needs. The curriculum for advisors was very comprehensive and full of valuable resource materials. I was privileged during my time as an advisor to advise just under 50 kids in 3 years. They ranged from the definitely college-bound to the unsure, unsupported, ill-informed first-generation student and a myriad of students in between. All came with one thing in common. They all had a need for information, encouragement, and consistent contact during the course of their post-secondary planning. I advised a student who wanted to go to community college in Nevada to pursue a career in cosmetology. That took a little research. I advised a student who wanted to pursue a career in theater at the University of Southern California. Both of those students are successfully chasing their dreams at their respective schools now. I worked with a wonderful young man with a severe learning disability in the language processing area who was very uncertain about the possibility of college being in his future. He happened to be brilliant in math and science. The first time I met with him, he was not capable of eye contact. His head was down and he was very sullen. We spent a year and a half meeting, and with documentation from his resource room teacher and a great deal of research, we found the right program that could accommodate his disability. He received a scholarship to attend the University of Portland and is pursuing a career in medicine. By June of his senior year, knowing that a college wanted him and is willing to put money on the line to support his endeavor, he walked with confidence across the stage at commencement and ended his high school career by shaking my hand, looking me straight in the eye, and saying, "Thank you." A delightful young lady was assigned to me 2 years ago who was determined to be the first person in her family to go to college. She's now a sophomore at Southern Oregon University. She applied for a number of scholarships in the course of our meetings and received some. She got enough money together to make it to school. I heard from her recently, and she's applying for a new scholarship this year, a diversity scholarship. She qualifies for this particular scholarship under the definition of being a first-generation college student. She wrote her essay about her heritage as a young woman who was the fourth generation to grow up on their family residence of the Marlow Creek area up Coos River. Her father, her grandfather, and her great-grandfather have all supported their families as loggers in that area, and she wrote very eloquently about her father. I hope she gets the scholarship. But the important thing is that she knows how to research the opportunities and to compete for the scholarship. She has the skills to do that now. As a parent, I wish my children had had access to an Aspire advisor. Life would have been much simpler. As an Aspire advisor, I have been privileged to assist students, help them see the possibilities that their futures can afford them, and help them make the plans necessary to achieve their goals. As a school board member, I have seen our college participation and scholarship application rates steadily rise. Marshfield High School now has 38 active Aspire Advisor volunteers with 198 students enrolled in the program that are matched for one-on-one post-secondary planning assistance. Our advisor team at Marshfield consists of parents, retired educators, the city manager, a stockbroker, our school superintendent, a chiropractic office manager, a pediatrician, a flower shop owner, just to name a few. Our volunteer corps is very diverse. I've done nothing more rewarding in my life outside raising my family than this endeavor. The program makes a difference, one student at a time. I'm very passionate about what can be done with and accomplished with this program. And after 22 years of being a student advocate and a child advocate in the volunteer arena, I rejoined the workforce and accepted a position with the Aspire program as a Southern Regional Supervisor. I thank you for your time today, and I'd like to introduce to you two students who have been a part of the Aspire program. Matt Lehman from Marshfield High School in Coos Bay, and Lissy Miller, who is from Reedsport High School in Reedsport.
Senator Marshfield has a question.
Yes, sir.
What about confidentiality?
Between mentor and student?
No. Are you dealing with the files of the students when you are preparing scholarships and any other?
The volunteers fall under the policies and procedures of the school. The volunteers belong to the school, in other words. The volunteers sign a confidentiality statement. They receive an orientation training regarding confidentiality. And the student's permission, a parent must sign a permission form.
Now, are you aware of a similar, very primitive program at North Eugene High School about 15 years ago?
Yes, that was actually one of our model programs.
Yeah.
Pat Lorimer. Yes, North Eugene and North Bend were both model
Pat
programs.
Pat Lorimer did an absolutely fantastic job. In fact, when I taught at Springfield High, I would send kids to her, and she took one as a freshman and got him a great scholarship. Theater, Broadway star.
Wonderful.
But Pat Lorimer pioneered this program.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know I talked to the people at Springfield about it, and they immediately raised the whole issue of confidentiality, and we can't let late people get into the files and on and on. Yeah. But she prevailed and did a great job. So I'm really pleased that
the North Bend Naggers, our other model program, joined Aspire because they wanted to come back and use our curriculum.
Now, is that still involved in any way?
She is at Oak Hill, private school in Eugene, and I do call her once in a while for some of her great advice.
I'll have to call her now.
Please do.
Thanks.
She started something wonderful.
Chairman Starr, members of the committee, my name is Lissy Miller, and I'm a graduate of Reedsport High School, and I'm currently a sophomore at Willamette University. Choosing a path in life is a tough decision for anyone, but if you add in the scholarship and college application deadlines and the normal stresses of high school's latter years, it's a quite daunting task. Halfway through my junior year in high school, I was matched up with an Aspire mentor from my community of Reedsport, and we began meeting monthly in order to iron out the details and expectations of my upcoming senior year, and we just got to know each other a little bit. My mentor's name is Kathy Daly, and coming from such a small community, I already knew her through various school events, and she also works with my mom. It was nice to have a familiar face from the community as my mentor. During my junior year, we talked about SATs, and together we made a schedule for what I would do that summer in preparation for the exam. She also provided me with general information on a few of the colleges I was interested in. In the fall of my senior year, we began our monthly meetings again, and she was so helpful. She made a checklist for me detailing all the different deadlines and for various scholarships and college application dates for the colleges I was looking at. Although I was fairly self-motivated about my future, I definitely welcomed the help that Kathy gave me, and the information she provided was immeasurably beneficial. She helped me draft personal goal statements and advised me on how to make a good resume. These are the things that wouldn't have necessarily turned out as well if I was left to figure it out on my own. It was really good just to have someone there who kept me on task when I became distracted by my studies or various other extracurricular activities. Even after I made the decision to attend Willamette University, we continued to meet and work on scholarship applications. With her guidance, I learned the proper way to type applications, as well as some rules of thumb that I've carried with me to college, such as photocopying all applications and documents that I send. It was also great to have a rapport with an adult who such a valuable resource. I feel very strongly that the Aspire program is excellent because people like Kathy Daly have experienced a transition from high school to college or to various other career paths, and this experience is very beneficial to high school's juniors and seniors who might struggle either with the decision of what to do after high school, or perhaps they just need a little motivation to explore their options and to help them do what it takes to prepare for whatever they choose. I know that having an Aspire mentor made my senior year much easier and less stressful because of all the information I needed was right at my fingertips through my mentor. I know that a number of my peers did not have the support, the motivation, or the information they needed to navigate the college and scholarship process. They learned to seek the resources that were available to them through our guidance counselor, Phyllis Wagner, who supervises the Aspire program at my school. A classmate of mine named Mike was negatively socialized his entire life to believe that he was not smart enough to attend college and that he was nothing but a troublemaker. And upon entering his senior year, he didn't hold very high expectations for himself. It was his Aspire mentor who helped him organize the information he was receiving about possible occupations and schooling post-high school, and who ultimately helped him to make the decision to attend Rogue Community College. She also provided him with the needed resources to help him follow through with his choice and make going to college become a reality for him. Through the Aspire program, students like the one I described may not have realized that there was a plethora of options and opportunities awaiting them after high school. These are some of the examples of how the Aspire program has benefited my life as well as the lives of my classmates, and I feel that it's a very important program to have in schools. And I'm going to hand you over to Matt.
Chairman Starr, Senator Committees, I'd like to thank you guys for having us here today. I really enjoy talking about the Aspire program that really helped me out with getting into the school I'm in. My name is Matt Lehman. I'm a sophomore at Willamette University across the street. I attended Marshfield High School, and I graduated in June 2001. I was part of the Aspire program throughout my senior year. Basically, Aspire was an instrumental part of my college-making decision. It was not only an instrumental part of choosing Willamette University, but it was an instrumental part of the teaching today that I've used throughout my schooling process at Willamette, and I intend to use when I apply for graduate school in 2 years. Basically, the main reason it aided me in my college-making decision is it helped me find the schools that best suited my interests, both academically and extracurricularly. It made sure that I was in the right process of finding the schools that best suited my needs when I was going to go to my undergraduate school, and that it was a very important process for me. Secondly, it not only did it do this, but it, even beyond that, it took me to the point where it helped me with the application process for my individual schools. It made me apply the unique benefits that I could bring to schools and scholarships later on, and intertwine those into my personal essays, so I could write an essay for Willamette University and apply a unique characteristic that would help me out being across the capital and stuff like that, and then also use that a different aspect of my abilities to apply to Brown University or Gonzaga University. And things like that were very inspirational and very important in my application process, not only in getting accepted, but also learning how to write personal essays that I continue to use to this day. Probably the biggest and most important thing that it taught me was general reminders, and it gave me general reminders because as a college student, a high school student, I like to procrastinate a lot. I push stuff off. I'll wait till the last minute to do something, but Mrs. Ewis, my Aspire advisor, made sure that I was on top of everything and making sure that my applications for scholarship and my applications for schools were in on time every deadline. I usually had them in, you know, a month before because Mrs. Ewis was forcing me to get them done, and that was an instrumental part of me getting the scholarships I did and able to attend a fine university such as Willamette University. Beyond the immediate benefits of Aspire, of getting me into Willamette University and getting accepted to five other colleges, Aspire has been crucial in decision-making processes that I've used at Willamette University, and like I said, that I will use when I apply for future when I use applications to apply to future colleges. And also, I continue to use the scholarship reminders that Mrs. Ewis gave me when I apply for scholarships. Probably one of the most important things that she taught me was how to write a personal essay and how to write it well. Mrs. Ewis made sure that I knew how to convey the unique attributes that I could bring to a school and the unique attributes that I had for applying for scholarships in each and every essay. And that also She also taught me how the basic format for answering a question such as, what are your short and long-term goals? A question like that is not something you see every day, and teaching a high school student specifically how to answer a question like that in the best possible manner is something that I see as instrumental in the application process. Beyond that, she taught me the scholarship and financial aid application deadlines and how to apply for them, as in picking the right scholarship, how to write a scholarship resume, and how to write scholarship essays. Each one of those has been very important in the ability for me to attain money so I can attend undergraduate school at Willamette University, and has been instrumental in me getting into the colleges I did get into. She taught me where to find scholarships, specifically the FastWeb, which is a scholarship-based online resource, and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which both offer scholarships on the national and state level. And those were very important for my process of getting in. Also, the school websites and the local scholarships, and probably most importantly, the FAFSA, because I don't think I would have got that in on time if it wasn't for her. I'd say the most important thing that she did teach me, though, was the pro-con spreadsheet that I used in my decision-making to get into college. I not only use this to decide to go to Willamette University because of its closeness to the capital, but I also use it in my everyday life at Willamette University in deciding what classes I'm going to take and what groups I'm going to be part of. And that has been instrumental in me getting the most out of my education process. As my Aspire advisor, at Marshfield High School, Mrs. Ewis was an instrumental part of my college's decision-making process. Mrs. Ewis volunteered her time to teach me about the application process, how to set up a pro-con spreadsheet, and how to write successful personal essays. After talking to many Willamette students that did not have the same opportunity, I realized how important it was for me to get the Aspire training that I got from Mrs. Ewis. I urge this committee to support Senate Bill 184 and establish Aspire as a statute. Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Yes, Senator Morissette.
Mike, Matt, is that your name?
Yes.
If you decide to run for the legislature from Coos County at some point, will you use the pro-con spreadsheet to help make that?
Chair Starr, Senator Morissette, yes, I think I would. Hopefully it would turn out that it would be a benefit for the state of Oregon and myself.
Very good. Thank you, Matt.
Very good. Anyone else want to testify or any other questions? Anybody else? Thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 184.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard. Is it going to Ways and Means? We need to go to Ways and Means?
You didn't.
No monetary cost. No. But I.
No, let's not send it to Ways and Means. No, let's not send it to Ways and Means. May I join in this conversation? Are we in work session?
We're in work session.
Okay.
The bill was assigned to us with a subsequent referral.
We can remove it.
We can remove it.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Point of order.
We can remove it. I think that we would incur the wrath of the co-chairs if they had stuck a prior referral on this. It was for a reason. So this is a great program.
And they're not asking for any money.
We had a... Mr. Chair. We had an issue early on in session. A lot of referrals to Ways and Means got placed on the bills that I was informed didn't need to be there. So they were trying to play catch-up on later Senate bills. I noticed this is 184, so this might have been... We can send it to Ways and Means, but I really don't feel like it needs to go to Ways and Means. I'm happy to send it wherever committee...
What's the fiscal, Mr. Chairman?
Nothing.
Mr. Chairman, the person once said it's easier to apologize after the fact.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, we just finished our presentation on our agency's budget, which includes the funding for the Aspire program in our agency's budget, which will go before Ways and Means. And I just did want to reiterate what the chair was mentioning. There is no general fund dollars associated with this program. It is all other funds. It is through donors and AmeriCorps grants, federal gear up grants.
But like I say...
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question? Thank you.
Yes.
Your budget will go before Ways and Means. Would this be appropriate then to go with your budget, or is this a separate issue completely that doesn't have to go to Ways and Means?
Chair Starr, Senator Morissette, and committee members, this is a change in the law that that establishes this program in statute, and it also establishes a fund at Treasury to accept donations. So there are two different pieces of legislation. I'm not up on whether it would make sense to co-mingle.
I guess I just wanted your take on whether or not it was related to the other, and I personally would like to see it go to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and not worry about Ways and Means.
We will move it in that direction and see if we
have to.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move that we rescind the substitute referral to Ways and Means. Can I do it all in one motion?
In one motion.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
We have to rescind the referral. Or should we not just refer it to the full floor with a due pass?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if it comes with a prior referral, we have to acknowledge that in some way and affirmatively rescind it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And again, it's a recommendation to the president to rescind. It doesn't have the weight of law. And also, if the House gets it and they decide it needs to go to Ways and Means, they could send it over.
Right. Mr. Chairman, thanks. I was not aware of the process.
We're learning. We're learning as we go. Appreciate the motion is to rescind the referral to Ways and Means and move Senate Bill 184 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any opposition? Show that it's a unanimous support. We open the public hearing on Senate Bill 185.
Carrier on 184.
184. Carrier.
I'd be very happy to carry that bill.
Senator Morissette will carry. Thank you. Yes, Jeff.
Chair Starr and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Sweetser, Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And this bill, Senate Bill 185, is asking for a change in the statute that would allow us to serve not only students who, Oregon students and non-Oregon students going to college, but it also include the institutions in which they are attending. And we are able to serve students in three of four capacities: an in-state student attending an in-state school, an in-state student going to an out-of-state school, an out-of-state student going to an in-state school, and the fourth box is an out-of-state student going to an out-of-state school. And the area that we're really focusing this bill in is schools that are on the borders of Oregon, like Clark College in Washington. Our students go there 2 years and then transfer to Portland State University. There are students in Idaho that end up going to Eastern Oregon University. And the goal here is to be able to provide them a loan guarantee for their total school experience so that they have just one entity that they're dealing with. We provide a lot of services while the student's in school and also after they are going to school. And this would allow us to serve them throughout their college experience. And the sheet that I just handed out just talks about some of the benefits of our agency being a student loan guarantee office. And I would just point out that there is no general funds associated with this bill, and that the loan guarantee program that we've been participating in for 35 years, allows us to provide some synergy in offering all of the programs that we administer for the legislature. We're in the Oregon Opportunity Grant. We're in the Private Award program. We are the House for the Aspire program. And it's the combination of resources that allows us to have the kinds of infrastructure that keeps costs down. And I just, the couple of points there. There's over 50 jobs that are associated with the loan program, which means that we have family wage jobs that also creates the supports the local businesses and the state's tax structure. And the loan program also supports the state government services charges that we contribute to as a state agency. And with that, I'll just open it up to any questions that you may have.
Any questions?
Yes.
Senator Morissette.
Help me understand this. A student lives in Clark County, and they attend a community college in Clark County and transfer to Portland State. Is that what you
indicated? That is correct.
And so at what point would you engage with that student as they attend Clark County?
That is correct.
And what... And that would involve a total loan package for the 4 years, or how do we deal with this?
That is what we are envisioning. They're going to Clark College, planning on completing at Portland State University. And the goal in the student loan industry is to have one place in which the student can go. And by having us... have the ability to serve that student while they're at Clark Community College means that they don't have to make any changes when they come to Portland State University. So there's no confusion once they get out of school about who their lender is, who their guarantor is, and it gives us the opportunity to communicate with them through their college experience. So
now,
it's...
In the event they do not end up at Portland State, they decide to go to the University of Washington instead, mm-hmm. what happens?
This bill would also allow us to serve them, continue serving them in that capacity.
So we would be serving a Washington residence both in the community college and in the university level with our Oregon...
student loan guarantee.
Boy... have to think about that.
What's the liability?
Chair Starr, Senator Morissette, that there is no liability. We operate under the federal student loan program. We are a guarantor in partnership with the U.S. Department of Education that operates throughout the nation, actually throughout the world, the student loan program.
Thank you.
Okay, we're not dealing with any general fund money, or is that true?
Chair Starr and Senator Morissette, that is correct.
Okay. Any further questions? Not. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 185, open work session on Senate Bill 185. You still need to think about it?
Please
do.
This would point out the staff measure summary says no fiscal impact, but it really should say no fiscal impact yet issued. I don't really have anything from the fiscal office yet, and this is also another bill that had a prior referral to Ways and Means.
You know, I guess I'm... We're putting energy... into an out-of-state education program. And I, you know...
What's the downside here, Jeff? We apparently need a little help.
Chair Starr and Senator Morissette and members of the committee, personally, I don't see a downside. What I see is an opportunity for us to serve students on the boundaries of Oregon's border. a high likelihood that they're going to go to Oregon schools. In your example, they could choose to go to the University of Washington. In the fiscal impact, there we do not anticipate any additional costs associated with this, but there are additional revenues associated with this, which allow us to spread our cost over a larger population.
Is there a reciprocal agreement with other states that with your types of commissions that they would help students in, or do we need a reciprocal?
Chair Starr.
There's a reverse of the situation with a Portland student who would say, hey, I'm going to transfer to a Washington school, and would the Washington Scholarship Commission assist that person for its first 2 years at a Portland Community College with the anticipation they were going to go to Washington State? That would be the reverse situation.
Correct. Chair Starr and Senator Morissette, that happens now.
It does.
And we have national guarantors that are located in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Who are...
That's fine. I just want to be sure that we're not supporting a one-way program, or it does involve state funds, or it does involve time that otherwise would be spent on strictly Oregon students and so on. I just wanted to be sure about that.
Chair Starr, Senator Morissette, that is not the case.
Okay. And, you know, there are different kinds of liability. Political liability is another issue. And, you know, we have to explain some of these programs to people out there who think, why are you doing that? And who don't understand that. So I just wanted to understand what I was going to vote for.
Sure.
Thank you.
Chair would entertain a motion to move the bill with rescinding the referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, is this another one of those that was referred? I am instructed. I just didn't realize that was happening in the process, and I appreciate an explanation from my good colleague, Senator Decker. So moved.
So moved. It's been moved that we move Senate Bill 185 to the floor of the DuPass, rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, show that the committee is in favor.
Good. And thank you, Chair Starr, members of the committee.
I will...
You explain the bill.
I will explain the bill. I will carry.
Very good.
Chair will carry. We're going to open an informational hearing on... Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Whatever, are you going to meet with Charlie?
Dwayne, please come and explain to us about College Planning Consultant.
Okay. Chair Starr, members of the committee, my name is Dwayne DiCola. I am the owner of College Solutions Northwest. I am a certified college planning specialist, and what we do as college planners is we assist families with the, as you heard from the Aspire program, we assist families navigate the process. We are focused mainly on the financial side because, as we all know, college is a very huge investment, and considering today's cost of attendance and everything else that students and parents face, they need to deal with the financial aspect of this. We aren't there to help them per se pursue scholarships as one avenue. There are many avenues. There are severe tax consequences to the actions that parents take, and we assist them in that process. The company that I represent, College Funding Solutions, out of Port Angeles, Washington, we offer a program called the College Graduate Program. It's a four-step process, and similar to what the Aspire program does, we deal with the academic aspects as well as the financial aspects. And I do believe I sent you some information that currently, not only in Oregon but across the country, the graduation rate for college students that are entering college is only 50%, meaning of the 3 million students that enter college every year, 5 years later, only 1.5 million of them graduate. As a financial professional, I have a real problem with that, and I got into this industry because I felt there was a better way. The majority of that 1.5 million that do not graduate because of money problems or money issues. Our program helps resolve that. We basically take the whole overall package of the student, the parents, and the financial situation, and we develop a plan that's been proven over 10 years to get results. In 10 years of the college graduate program, we have put 8,000 students through the program. Our graduation rate, we anticipate at the end of this school year, will be 85%. So when you look at the financial impact that our program is having on the community and the society as a whole, is absolutely tremendous. You know, we do charge for our program. It's $2,000. We like to think that that is a down payment on $1 million return, which is the difference between a high school graduation, you know, student with a high school graduation and a college graduation. So that's the program that I represent, and I'm very proud to do that. I'm one of only two in the state of Oregon that represent College Funding Solutions, and I am a licensed financial professional, so I know how to handle the parents' financial situation, be it investments, taxes, or whatever they need help with.
So. Now,
go ahead.
I'm not sure which. The chart on the high schools.
Yes.
Now these. Okay, so number of students entered. Could you explain the chart?
Yes, that chart is from an Oregon University Systems study that just came out last week, the benchmarks for first-year students. And what you're looking at is statewide. These are simply Oregon University System students.
Yeah.
Okay, does not include private colleges. So of the 6,740 students that entered the seven public colleges, I believe that's what they studied, only 83% of those actually made it to their sophomore year, meaning 17% of those, for one reason or another, dropped out or transferred to another school. The data was not complete. The point of this study that did come out was, if you go over to where it says high school GPA, these students are leaving their high schools with very impressive GPAs of 3.4 is their average, and then when they get to college, it drops dramatically down to 2.75. And if you read the article that's prior to that, that was by the Oregonian, it's basically reviewing that information, saying that these kids are not getting the preparation that they need to go out there and be successful once they enter college.
This was a recent article, and I saw the article, and I saw the chart, and it looked familiar. Yeah. Related to it. But yeah, thank you. That's very.
What grade level do you typically get involved with family or the student in college planning?
I like to say the sooner the better. We will take them as soon as freshman year, and all honestly, I prefer to get them as a sophomore. The sooner we can get the planning underway, the better. From a financial perspective, it's going to cost the same amount of money whether we get them as seniors or we get them as sophomores. From a financial perspective, it's extremely important that they get started early, because decisions that they make, if they wait until their senior year to make them, they can have a very serious detrimental effect on their financial aid ability, as well as, you know, true out-of-pocket costs. Because the way that I like to explain this is you're dealing with a financial aid system and you're dealing with a tax system, and they don't work well together. And that's why professionals like me, my industry is growing very rapidly, because we all know the cost of tuition and what's happening out there, be it public or private schools. And when you add that into the investments that these parents have lost over the last 2 or 3 years, they are now faced with skyrocketing tuition and lower investments, but the bill is still there. They've got to pay for it. So we would like to get them, you know, so we can implement the effective strategies, because it to me, it doesn't matter what their economic level is, whether they're high income, low income. These types of decisions have a dramatic effect on their financial aid eligibility.
May I?
Yes. Yes.
Well, as a former high school teacher and father of 8 children, most of whom have a degree, 5 of them have their degree and master's and didn't get any help from us. They did it on scholarships. And my advice to freshmen was you better start getting your act together if you want a scholarship, and be sure to do the kinds of things that will distinguish you from all of the other hundreds of thousands of people who are applying. And so I think, I'm sure you include activities, build a resume, be involved. Do you, is that the kind of thing that you help people prepare for?
Yes, Senator Morissette. The program is very all-inclusive. We add in academic strategies as well as financial strategies because if you don't have an effective student...
Well, wait a minute. Do you talk about resume building? One common thing is working with their church. Another common thing is volunteering in the community, becoming involved in city. Some schools have students on city council, at least as observers and so on. I mean, is that part of your advice as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything that, as you mentioned, anything that makes that student stand out and rise above the crowd.
I think being involved as a freshman, sophomore, if you wait until you're a senior, forget it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we face, as I'm sure the Aspire program faces as well, is college's competition. And those kids that get it early on are the ones that are going to get the more scholarships.
May I?
Yes.
You may have heard me refer to Pat Lorimer in North Eugene High School in the 1985, and I actually sent a kid over there to her as a freshman, well, as a sophomore, and she got him helped him get a great scholarship, and that was a revolutionary program at the time, and that was a one-woman effort. And I didn't realize that it expanded into what they're doing in the Aspire program. But I think what you're doing is extremely important. And so good luck. I think it's important.
Thank you, Senator Morissette.
Well, now, you explained to me that you also volunteer as an Aspire volunteer.
Yes, I am on the advisory board for Sherwood High School's Aspire program. We call it the Bowman Beyond. I think there's room for all of us, and I think we have wonderful volunteers. The challenge that they face, just like the counselors at Sherwood High School as an example, you have 2 counselors for 800 students, and you have at that school statistically over 500 students that are going to pursue college, and you have 6 Aspire volunteers. There is a need for professional counselors like me. The one thing that the Aspire program does not do, and you had mentioned confidentiality, is they aren't in a position to work with the parents on the financial side. And that's really the key that I feel that we bring to the families.
Yeah. So. Well, I think it's a great service to offer, so I support what you're doing, and I'm very happy to know about it. Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate very much you coming down and talking to us about it. With that, we're going to close our informational hearing and adjourn the Senate Education Committee for this Thursday.